And welcome back to the Roundtable on a Wednesday morning, 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We kick off the program, as we always do, with the Roundtable panel. Joining us today is NYPERG's Blair Horner. Good morning, Blair.
Good morning.
The smartest man about state government that I have ever met.
He's damning me with faint praise again.
Indeed.
No, he's special.
Yeah, that's right. And also here, also very smart about state politics, Alan Shartok is here. Welcome, Alan.
Yes, I see. Mm-hmm.
And looky who the cat dragged in.
Oh, boy.
Rosemary Armeo is back
making
after
a rare appearance.
Absence. So nice to see you again.
It's great to be back. I have missed you this summer when there was no shortage of big news to be talking about.
I'll tell you, it has.
Wow.
It has not relented, and there is more to come, more happening all the time. And we'll start in Ferguson, where we've been starting for some time. This is from the AP. Police and protesters in Ferguson have shared the streets again at night, putting aside for at least a few hours some of the hostility that had filled those hours with tear gas and smoke. The St. Louis suburb still had plenty of protests Tuesday over the fatal police shooting of Michael Brown. Intentions did rise briefly when a bottle was hurled at officers, but it was more subdued than other nights. Police said they made 47 arrests. That came the day before Attorney General Eric Holder was to visit Ferguson to meet with the FBI and other officials carrying out an independent federal investigation into Brown's death. That's today. That'll happen today. And officials have said a grand jury could begin hearing evidence today to determine whether the officer should be charged in Brown's death. So Eric Holder is presumably almost there or on the ground in Ferguson now. And what do we make of the way things are going this morning?
Oh, do you want me to go first? And I
well,
don't know.
Well, you have a lot to make up for.
Well, it's true. I don't know exactly what you've talked about. This is like any other news story. We don't have the whole story. The evidence that is in remains confusing. Was he was shot. Michael Brown was shot 6 times. Was he surrendering? Was he charging? We don't know. And it's a mess out there. I blame the cops on this. They are throwing tear gas and targeting and arresting journalists. I'm sorry, that's a First Amendment no-no. They have pissed off their entire, annoyed their
Rosemary
entire.
Back.
I know, I'll get back in that. They have totally annoyed.
I'll be back in 5 minutes.
They have totally annoyed and set off the whole community. I think the feds should have been in there faster and stronger. And the only good thing that can come out of this is that we're having a national conversation about militarizing police, which should not have happened. So that's my quick synopsis.
And you're right. What's going on here is sharply conflicting accounts of what happened, and slowly but surely we're hearing more, and it seems to be a very sharp divide between those who, and there are several who say he rushed the officer, and the others who say no, he was not rushing the officer, and so one of them is true, presumably.
Right. I mean, some of this stuff will be determined, I guess, on some of these autopsy results that have come out. I guess so far the autopsy results, at least on the body, showed that there were no powder burns from the bullets themselves, which make you think that that he wasn't as close, so that the officer may have been able to just disable him by shooting him in the leg. It's hard to tell until you look at the clothes, I guess. And so there's a lot more that needs to be figured out in terms of what actually happened. But he's a big guy. Michael Brown was a big guy, 6'4". Obviously, something happened with the police officer. But when a police officer resorts to deadly force on an unarmed young person in the middle of the day in the street, it at best is bad training. That's not supposed to happen. You couple that with, as Rosemary was saying, you actually have almost an occupying force of police that are predominantly white in a community that's predominantly black, using highly militarized tactics, at least initially. They've made the situation worse. And now it's almost an international phenomenon. Amnesty International said observers there last night. People are coming in from other...
BBC's talking about it all the
time. That's right.
It's being talked about everywhere.
Activists are coming in from other cities around the country. I mean, this is the kind... It's a powder keg. And, the funeral will be coming up soon. I mean, there's other things that are still going to play out. I think we, sadly, haven't seen the end of this.
This is there's no way to justify what happened. I mean, if this was a big kid who had done something bad, there's also disputes about what happened in the store ahead of time. Okay, but aren't police supposed to be able to handle a situation like that? Instead, you've got a death that needs explaining, and then they go on and inflame the whole community, which is certainly not good public relations. And covering his name, hiding the officer's name, if it had been any other person who had committed a shooting that's under investigation, the name would have been out. And I'm sorry, targeting journalists who are trying to cover this, it's unconstitutional.
And you're starting to see other stories pop up in other cities, New York City's.
Well, that's the point of this.
The stranglehold issue. Yeah. The LAPD killed someone recently as well, a young African American. So it starts to play out, and it picks up its own momentum. Sorry, Alan.
No, I've been saying all along that any of us who have children know the idea that our kids are at risk becomes primary to us. I mean, we can't think of anything that's more important than protecting our children. And of course, you're exactly right when you say, and I've been saying this, that it shows up on the front page of the New York Times every day for a reason. And that reason is that everybody's scared to death that the cities will burn again, that we're gonna have this kind of thing. I, unlike Rosemary, happen to believe that the police in the thing got screwed up, there's no question, in Michael Brown's death. But I happen to believe that they've been doing very well. Right now, the agitators, I know how you feel about the press, but the agitators have been singled out and pulled out. And rubber bullets are being used rather than real bullets. And I think that they, and four branches of government, at least three or four, have shown up, to handle this. So I think everybody's being very careful right now, and I, for one, like that.
The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. As I mentioned at the outset, Attorney General Eric Holder is in, or will be soon in, Ferguson to meet with FBI agents who have been conducting a civil rights investigation into the shooting. And Alan, maybe I am misremembering history, but isn't it early in an ongoing local investigation for the feds to be launching a civil rights investigation? In other words, usually they wait till the investigation is over and then the civil rights investigation begins.
Well, yes, I think that's what usually happens, but this is not usual. Mm-hmm. And I think what's going on here is this fear that this thing is going to have legs. And so if you bring in and you show that you're doing everything possible, there's also the question of the first African American president, his African American attorney general, both good men, who obviously want to have something to leave in the debate over race in this country, and therefore I think that this is either a potential opportunity or a must do right now.
Well, I think that's all true. I mean, but to some extent, while this is predominantly about race, because again, you can easily see how the community would view this as an occupying force, it's also about the economy of the country. I mean, ever since 2008, the wealthy have become wealthier. Everybody else is sort of stagnating. I mean, there's a lot of forces at play right now, which I think add tinder to the box.
And as I said yesterday, Blair, we have the potential for the United States Senate going Republican. So now, in the same time that people are saying we've got to deal with this inequality, you have a bunch of people there who have made it clear that they don't believe in government handouts.
And thanks to the U.S. Supreme Court, they will have more influence in the election than ever before.
This is all great. It's intellectual conversation among pundits. I think what's going on in Ferguson are people who are highly annoyed with reason at a police force that is treating them like they are no better than residents of Gaza being treated by the Israeli military.
Now, I'm interested in your reaction to this. Now, you're reacting to the police dealing with the demonstrations.
Right.
Now, earlier in the week, we discussed
More than that, I don't like that they didn't release the officer's name. I understand that they wanted to protect him, but we don't do that. We put out names. I think that they should have invited, or the feds should have moved in earlier. I don't know about this, that it's earlier than usual. They need to go in there and deal with the situation. That's happening every day. It's not like we're looking at something that happened last week. It's ongoing. And there were arrests last night.
And you know, Rosemary, you make a point, because when there are things like elections in some of the states where things are not always done according to Hoyle, they show up. They show
That's
up.
Right.
They don't wait till afterwards.
That's right.
Now, let me ask you a question, Rosemary, one that we have discussed earlier in the week. And that is, it seems that the information, the official information about this case, has been slowly released by the prosecutor.
Yes.
Is that, it's often done that way. Is that a negative in this case especially, or... As a journalist, I mean, isn't this the way the investigation should be done, right?
From a public relations point of view and a community relations point of view, to withhold that name, we're going to protect the officer, but they're putting out all kinds of material about Michael Brown. It was horrible. It inflamed the community.
But the DA has to work with the police. That's how it works. The DA and the police, if they don't get along...
They knew who the officer was the day it happened.
No, Alan. I know they knew.
So there's no reason that name could not have come out as a suspect.
The people on the street probably knew who the police officer was.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was broad
daylight. Why was it?
I mean, it's sort of amazing, actually, I'm sure that the name was coming out, and that may have been the reason why they eventually just released it.
We're not talking about his guilt or innocence. We're just identifying. Darren Wilson is the officer that we're looking at. We're investigating. Please stay calm while we figure out what happened.
But by the way, I'm not arguing whether or not it should have been done. I'm telling you that the reason that a DA starts to, and there are lots of stories about this particular DA and what his involvements are, but the DA does not want to tick off, or the using the word that Rosemary
Yeah, let's not do that
sorry,
again.
Sorry. I've been away.
Anyway.
I forgot.
Say it in German and you'll be fine. I'll tell you what, let's take a short break here. Now, the dovetail between this story and our next story is, yesterday, Governor Nixon expressed support for the St. Louis County prosecutor. In Staten Island, there is a district attorney who is investigating the chokehold death. And there are calls also that say, well, he cannot be impartial in this case. So let's take a short break for underwriting.
We're getting a lot of mail.
The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Back in a flash.
Support for WAMC comes from Topperson, creams designed to heal muscle aches, back, neck, and shoulder pain, injuries, carpal tunnel, and more. Topperson.com. Tannery Pond Concerts, New Lebanon, New York, presenting Trio Virado, flute, viola, and guitar, this Saturday at 8 p.m., 888-820-1696. Capital Power, Albany, New York, dealer and installer of Kohler standby generator systems, capitalstandbypower.com. And Buttermilk Falls Spa, Milton, New York, featuring treatments using organic, natural products and offering a solar geothermal heated sauna, steam room, and pool. Open daily, buttermilkspa.com.
The roundtable on WAMC. Everyone's very excited. Rosemary is back.
That's right.
Hurling four-letter words. It's just like old times. 25 minutes after 9 o'clock, and we have some email.
We do. Gregory says, turned on the radio this morning and heard Rosemary's voice. Glad she's back. I'm sure, capital S, that she's been away doing some interesting things. Hopefully she will share some tidbits with us. That's what he said.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
And then Joel said, Rosemary, big capital letters, and 5, 6, 7 exclamation marks.
Wow.
Big hugs. XXOO. It doesn't stop there.
I didn't hear from my children, by the way, so this is a nice substitution.
Your surrogate family is checking in. Well done.
Surrogates.
The groupies.
This one not so much.
Right.
I listened to your station under duress. Under duress. Who's got you in a chokehold?
Yeah.
I mean,
the
more I hear the likes of Rosemary, whatever her name is, and her lack of being able to use the English language without corrupting it with profanity, I find most distasteful and inexcusable. She has no business being on your station, as her propensity to use foul language is clearly weakness, and her strong left-wing attitudes, along with the rest of the commentators, is more than apparent. Small wonders I listened and watched Fox, FOX, which is more to my right-wing liking, RV. But listen to this. He's listening to us under duress. What do you mean duress?
All right, now.
Fox is there. Turn on.
Running out of time. We didn't get to our topic.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Tom says, Rosemary, you go, girl. Good job, agree bro. Totally.
Okay, so it's 3-1.
So far.
We don't take that, Fox News watcher.
Come on now.
Yeah. And then Richard says, can you tell me who or what is keeping young black men in Ferguson from joining the Ferguson Police Department? I'm sure if that's it.
Okay, well, we have a couple of minutes here, and I wanted to touch on this story. This from the AP. A New York prosecutor said Tuesday he would ask a grand jury to consider charges in the death of a black man placed in an apparent chokehold by a white police officer. Staten Island DA Daniel Donovan announced that an extra grand jury will be asked to hear evidence next month in the July 17th death of Eric Garner. Several members of New York's congressional delegation echoed calls for a Justice Department investigation. They questioned whether Donovan, a Republican, could adequately investigate the case, given his close working relationship with the police and the borough's large population of police officers. Echoes of Ferguson here. Quickly, we only have a couple of minutes. Panel, Blair first.
Well, this is one of those issues where, just like in Ferguson, you're going to look for where's the impartial prosecutor?
But and is it not possible for a professional prosecutor
yes,
to be impartial?
Yes. And what's different here is we actually have the video of what happened, right? So we don't exactly know what happened in Ferguson, and there hasn't been the sort of the spontaneous response of the community. So clearly the public, at least it doesn't appear to be, views the police as a sort of a militarized force that's occupying their community. Whether or not Donovan can be fair or impartial, we'll know soon enough. And if he's not, it doesn't look like Holder's going to wait if Donovan's initial impaneling of a grand jury turns out to be somehow problematic. I assume the Attorney General will weigh in.
Rosemary.
This is an old issue that we get back to, and that's the relation between the police force and the community. I can remember this argument going on in the 60s when we were first looking at civilian review panels. And no one wants police not to exist. No one wants them not to be fully armed to deal with the bad guys. But maybe we've swung too much the other way. We certainly don't have good relations in Ferguson, in New York, and in many other places, between minority communities especially, and the police. And that has to be given some of our attention.
That's Alan, 30 seconds.
Well, you know, we've had Donovan here when he was running for higher political office. He seems like a very reasonable man. You'd want to give, but it is Staten Island, and Staten Island is the conservative borough. And so sometimes police values are, you know, lined up with what people are feeling in that particular
community. But
in
this case, there's a video of the cop doing
something that is against the law, specifically he's
told not to do.
Yes.
And it's completely on the video, and we see what happens.
Okay, the email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. We'll break for NPR News and back with more of the Rosemary Fan Club. It's 9:30. Lovely, soothing music, preparing for the next four-letter word hurled by Rosemary this morning.
But I have some of them.
I'm not sure we should do that.
No, she's writing them in notes to me.
She's right.
Don't tell them.
That doesn't surprise me. It's the roundtable panel. It is 9:37 on your Wednesday morning. Blair Horner from NYPERG is here. Rosemary Armeo is back. And Alan Shartok is here. And Alan, you got a big gig coming up.
Oh, boy, there's a big gig coming up at the Guthrie Center. It's the Berkshire Ramblers paying tribute to Pete and all.
Now, that's your group, the Berkshire Ramblers?
That's right. All acoustic.
You don't plug in?
No. Well, some people plug in, but basically it's a terrific band, and it's filled with ringers, you know, people who really know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, and they help out a great deal. Last time we were at the Guthrie Center, it's a complete benefit for the Guthrie Center, Arlo's Church, mm-hmm. in Great Barrington. And last time we were there, we sold it out. And a lot of people said, you didn't tell us. Well, I'm telling you now.
When is the gig?
I'm telling you now. It's August 30th.
Okay.
It's August 30th. It's right around the corner. So I don't want to be hearing from any of you saying, see, I said hearing.
I know, you dropped your G.
No G. That shows I'm a progressive. So I'm telling you now, if you want it, you got to call the Guthrie Center. You got to reserve your tickets. Yeah. And I don't want to be hearing anything else.
Okay. And so you say that some members of your band will plug into electric amplification?
Yeah.
Doesn't that, as a purist, don't you have a certain problem with that? In other words, you know, there was a big problem in Newport back in 65.
I remember it. And Pete has always denied that he took an axe to Bob Dylan's electric guitar.
So you're okay with this?
Very much so. Okay. I'm a permissivist. I believe whatever works. But we play basically unencumbered.
Unencumbered.
But we do have microphones.
See, that's cheating. You should be like Rudy Valli with a megaphone and singing that way. And frankly, I don't even think you need a megaphone. So the gig is when?
August 30th.
The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. And Alan, there's more mail. It's pouring in.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
There is. Okay. Here. Noah says, seriously, previous caller, if you have a problem with the P word, put on a helmet, go outside, and get ready for a life-altering shock. And then somebody, doesn't sound clear, Mac Talmy says, Rosemary's comment comparing Ferguson to Gaza was outrageous. Maybe that one went by me.
I think the police are being acting like and being thought of as an occupying force.
But let's put the shoe on the other foot just for a moment. If you are in the police force and there are those, and most of the people I've seen interviewed on CNN and otherwise want this to be a very peaceful. There are many clergy there last night.
They keep saying a small group within it.
Right. But if you're a police and someone is throwing Molotov cocktails or whatever, what do you do?
I mean, come on, right? This goes back to 1970 on the campus of Kent State. It's the police who set up the confrontation, who draw the line and say, don't come over it, and wear big shields and helmets. If there's anything confrontational in this, it's the authority, the people with the guns who have control over it. So the blame has to be on them, not on the outraged community.
Okay, so now Bowie Mack says, isn't the Fox viewer who said he's listening under duress afraid he'll lose his tri-cornered Tea Party hat? This begs the question, a Fox viewer who listens to NPR has hell frozen over? Regards, Gary. And Julia says, any ideas on Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's recent comments on Ferguson and class? Well, we talked about that
extensively
for a whole morning.
And that was a great piece, and I urge everybody to read it.
Yeah.
Time Magazine or Time.com.
No question. And hear from Gianni, who says, if the residents and organizers on the grounds in Ferguson were smart, they wouldn't let a good crisis go to waste. The best way to change the structural racism and ruling demographic is to launch a get out the vote registration campaign in the streets right now. This is a powerful opportunity.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar also touched upon that as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Reverend Sharpton called for it when he was in Ferguson and was criticized for encouraging people to register to vote.
And Gianni says this is a powerful opportunity to activate the electorate so that their representatives more accurately reflect the population.
I think the point that another listener made about more blacks on the force, why are they not there? Mm. They should be recruiting. I mean, there's lots of good that comes out of every crisis if it's handled correctly. I'm just not seeing that this one's being handled correctly so far.
And then Ryan says, did you see the decision out of Georgia police threw a flashbang in a baby's crib? Did anybody hear this?
No.
No, I didn't. I think I'll skip this one because I don't know it. Yeah. And David saw a black bear walking up in my neighborhood.
I'll be darned.
Maybe
you should do a bluegrass concert about that.
About the bear?
Sure. I got a bear in my yard. Okay, so that's it for the email?
Is that it?
These are serious topics we're discussing this morning.
All right. That would appear to be
That's great. And the email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Terrible story out of the Middle East today. Militant group says it killed American journalist in Syria. And I personally will not watch the video. I think YouTube took it down. This quoting from the New York Times, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria posted a video on Tuesday that it said showed the beheading of James Foley, an American journalist who was kidnapped in Syria nearly 2 years ago, according to a transcript released yesterday. Titled A Message to America, the video shows the journalist kneeling in the desert landscape clad in an orange jumpsuit, which the New York Times says was an apparent reference to the uniforms worn by prisoners at the American military detention camp in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Standing to his left is a masked ISIS fighter who begins speaking in English in what the Times says sounds like an East London accent. And then Foley made a statement and then his head got chopped off. Now, Horrendous story. Outrage everywhere. They've been beheading people for months.
Yeah, they've been shooting them in the back, prisoners. Yeah, that's the whole thing, that we treat Americans like their lives are somehow worth more of our attention. To me, you know, I think of this as a journalist. This is exactly the way the risk that James Foley took. He was not working for an established news agency that gives some protection.
What kind of protection could an established news agency give in that case?
You think twice about killing someone from the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, although that did not save Daniel Pearl. Yeah, exactly. But there's no support
about that.
Yeah, they didn't. ISIS is a horrible group, and we have, I think, George W. Bush to thank for the fact that they are now raging through two countries, Syria and Iraq.
Interesting. Now, you think George W.
Destabilized that area, took out an old regime because it was a bad regime, and what we've allowed is basically civil war between Sunnis and Shias, and now these are extremist Sunnis, and we have put them into the power that they are now.
I said at the time that by doing this and taking some of these so-called strongmen who were terrible out, we were in fact creating the next Osama bin Laden.
The guy who heads ISIS was arrested at one time, was one of the insurrectionists in Syria, and we let him go. He was a thug at the time, and he has thrived on unrest caused by the American occupation. We have our, and we arm everybody in the Mideast. Jeez, this is so totally on our doorstep. So that's one thing. I hate what's happened with ISIS. And now it's going to be a problem to deal with them for the entire world. The other thing is the journalists. He's the second American journalist to die in Syria. Iraq, Syria now are kind of combined. And the other one was Marie Colvin, who was trying to tell the world the news of what was happening in Homs, where people were being killed by their own government. So it makes me wonder, as I always do. I don't think I could do a war work like this. They want to tell the world what happened, and do we know? Are we any more aware of what's going on? Will anything happen because James Foley gave his head, literally, for this?
Going back to your comments, Rosemary, and Alan's comment specifically about knocking out the strong man, and then Rosemary saying this is at the feet of George W. Bush for creating that situation, taking both of those as gospel for now. Right-wing pundits say this is on the steps of the guy who pulled out the troops too early in Iraq for the situation to be stabilized, and then who could have gone ahead and done something about ISIS before they raided the bank, before they took over the military base and got all those arms. So that's what the right-wing pundits are saying. I'd like to hear what you have to say to that.
I think the right-wing pundits just haven't gone back far enough. If we had stayed in Iraq, if we had continued to buttress Malachi, this wouldn't have happened. But then Obama would have been getting criticism from me,
absolutely,
from you, from this group about, what the heck? Yeah. Why are we still there? We should not be.
Well, and there was this whole little thing about the Iraquis wouldn't agree to us staying there either. I mean, after all, it is their country. And there was a treaty that was under negotiation.
Never wanted us in the first place.
Now, maybe somebody could argue the president could have pushed harder for a deal. I mean, who knows, right? But it didn't happen.
And
it's
it was based
country.
On a lie.
Well, there is
you will remember
small
that.
Technical problem.
Mm-hmm. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We love hearing from you. Two paragraphs or less generally is the best way to get on the radio. And we'll take a short break and then back to the interesting New York political scene in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Binghamton University, working to provide students with the tools needed to acquire and create knowledge. Binghamton.edu. Cultural Pittsfield, presenting third Thursday, August 21st, beginning at 5 p.m., featuring an art plus industry theme, part of a citywide cultural initiative. DiscoverPittsfield.com. Metroland, an alternative news weekly serving New York's Capital Region and Western Massachusetts, and HMT at the Spa Little Theater, opening their 30th season this October with the musical The Addams Family at the Spa Little Theater, Saratoga Spa State Park. HomemadeTheater.org.
The Roundtable on WAMC, the Roundtable panel at 9:48 on your Wednesday morning. Alan Shartok is here. Rosemary Armeo has returned. Blair Horner is here. I'm Ray Graff.
I've returned too, by the way.
For Joe Donahue. But you're here often. It's not a big deal. But when Rosemary deigns to show up, it's huge.
I can see the rose petals with the tip-off when I walked in this morning.
Very nice. Alan, we have some more emails.
Well, we got from Bob. The police have to show up prepared for all eventualities. I don't know how they do that without appearing confrontational.
Okay. You leave your vest in the van in the back of the line until there's trouble.
It's the camouflage outfits that really sort of struck me.
And along the same lines. And along the same lines, James checks in with a missile entitled, "If Rosemary Thinks..." If Rosemary thinks that the police are inciting violence in Missouri, maybe she should go out in front of an angry mob and not draw a line and not wear a shield and helmet and show us all how to control an angry mob. Her comments are remarkably arrogant and ignorant. She almost sounds as if she knows what she's talking about. But we know better, don't we?
Wow. Aren't you glad you came back, Rosemary?
I know. Thank you very much for your comment.
So nice to have you here. Maybe we'll get you an email address. RosemaryPunchingBag at WAMC.
No, that's what I always say. Thank you.
Okay. And then...
I'm not thinking thank. So what can I say?
All right. Well, it's great to have everyone here. And roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address. All right. This one is a story that will not go away. From Casey Seiler in the Times Union. The divide between New York's good government groups over a proposed change to the redistricting system came into stark focus on Tuesday. One announced a lawsuit opposing the language of the ballot measure that will be put before voters this fall. The other held a teleconference to build support for its approval. Alan, you have strong thoughts on this. Blair Horner, in disclosure, your organization has a stance on this as well, and we'll get to that. But first, Alan.
No, I think first Blair, and I'll tell you why. Blair has been interviewed by every single media that you could possibly think of on this thing.
Al Jazeera America has not made it to my house.
All right, first Blair.
No, but let me just say, because this is a real stinkeroo, and Blair will give us a little background and then tell us.
Give us the background of what this is.
All right, this November, there'll be a question on the ballot for all New Yorkers to change the way the redistricting process works in the state of New York. And what it does is it says, the language in it says, it'll create an independent commission. And therein lies the reason for the rationale for the litigation.
So far, so good.
Except that it's not going to be an independent commission. So why did the Board of Elections call it that? We believe, and so does the Common Cause, that someone put their thumb on the scales to try to make the language seem better. Here's what it does. Right now, the legislature draws the lines under this proposal. The legislature would appoint a commission that would draw the lines.
And then they're not eligible. The legislators aren't eligible, but they all have a cousin Louie.
And their spouses can't be on the commission.
But they got other people they could put.
But the legislature approves whatever the commission comes up with. And if they don't like what the commission did, they get to draw the lines themselves. Sounds like the same old lousy system we have now, just dressed up and putting nice rosy lipstick on the pig.
So you're the legislative director of NYPIRG, and NYPIRG says what you say basically
say
today.
No.
This is not a good idea.
Right. We think it's not only bad; it's worse than the status quo because it's the first time ever in the state history it enshrines language saying that the map makers have to use the existing districts to work from. Nothing like that exists. They can't go back to scratch. They have to work off the rotten system we have now.
And a little background on this. When Andrew Cuomo ran for governor, he had as his main plank, I will veto any bill that draws the lines that the legislators make. It has to be by an outside group. So now he, quote, negotiates with the legislature, and they come up with what looks like a decent proposal. But when you read between the lines,
you don't even have to read between the lines. You have to read the lines. The problem is nobody
baloney.
Does.
Yeah, yeah.
And all they go by is the little summary that they get on the ballot, and it says it's independent.
And that's always fixed.
But if you recall the summary for the casino amendment, it was rather rosy.
It said, everyone, a chicken in every pot, a pony in every yard, and if you vote for the casino.
As long as you don't crap out.
But Ray, it gets
careful, even. Ray. Wait, careful,
can
Ray.
Can I ask one question?
Clarify
the question.
It's a game. It's a game.
Okay, this is not a story I followed on CNN International, so let me ask. Explain your opponent's point of view. Why are some people also interested in good government?
For instance, Citizens United. Citizens Union, I should say.
And the League of Women Voters both support the proposal because they say it's a modest step forward. board over a rotten system. They argue that, that they would vote, they would look at the language, that there's other language in the proposal that is good, but it all hinges on this commission.
Okay.
And the fact that ultimately the legislature makes the decision, just like they do now, in our view, means that really is just a dressed up version of the status quo, and that stinks.
Yeah, and now the, it's interesting, Ray, that you raised this question about two of the four Google groups, we call them Google groups,
right,
good government
good
groups,
government.
are for the Cuomo proposal, which I think is a phony proposal, to tell you the truth. So then the question is, what is their motive in supporting something which is clearly a stinker? And that, to me, comes down to, hey, let's go back to our members and say we got something.
Yikes.
Yeah. I Dick Daty of Citizens Union described the panel, and this is from Casey Seiler's piece, as a politically balanced and independent commission that limits the ability of legislators to draw their own maps. Is this or not the case?
No, at the when you read the proposal, it says if the legislature has to approve whatever the panel comes up with, and if they don't like what the panel
came up with,
they draw their own lines.
SOH.
That's not independent.
Shame on him.
Lots of rosy lipstick. But still a pig.
Okay.
It has to be rejected twice by the legislature.
That's right.
So that would be over 2 years?
No. The timetables are much shorter than that.
Wow.
The commission draws the legislature appoints the commission. Okay. So let's by some miracle assume that they picked independent people.
Yeah,
by some miracle.
Yeah,
which would be a miracle.
Yeah.
And then they don't like it. They vote it down. They draw the lines again. They vote it down. And then the legislature draws their own lines.
Yeah, so sort of like the Moreland Commission. We don't like this commission. Poof.
Sadly, there's not a lot of evidence in Albany about independent anything.
Well, let's get into the wording
except
of this.
Alan.
As in the Moreland Act Commission.
And Rosemary.
The wording, and of the wording of this, Susan Lerner said in a statement, Susan Lerner of Common Cause said, The words are intentionally confusing, misleading voters to think that the amendment would create an impartial and independent redistricting process. We saw the same issue about the wording with the casino amendment. Who writes the wording?
The State Board of Elections writes the
language. Who approves the wording?
They do. Okay. So there's a draft. They're
advised. Who appoints them?
They're advised by the Attorney General. The State Board of Elections is empowered. The Board of Elections is four people, two from each party, and they're appointed by the political parties. And for the life of me, why the political parties are the people charged with running the elections of the people of the state of New York is beyond me.
I put this to all three of our panelists.
By the way, the two major parties, there's no Green Party people, there's no Working Families Party people on this.
And they have come under intense agitation, intense scrutiny.
Yeah.
People really say they have not been doing well.
I put this to all three of you. In general, do people who live in New York, the general population, do they even care? Do they even care about this? I would propose that a certain number of people will just go yes or no, depending on what they feel, is whether they like the letter Y or the letter N. Do people care so
They're
much?
They're not even listening. They've turned off the radio.
No, but you make a very good point. We do know, and I've been studying this for years, and of course Blair does this terrific work on this, that people don't care about state politics. And we don't really know what that's all about, except that it's kind of removed. They put the legislature and the government up here in Albany. They care more about the city government in New York City than they do about the state government. And the state government is really very important, and they're the ones who make the rules.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's what people see in the media. Right. That's what they really pay the most attention to. So you have lots of international issues people look at. They look at national issues. There's only so much bandwidth, particularly in the summer, for the public to sort of pay attention to a lot of things. And redistricting, just the word, I've seen people with saliva sort of get in the corner of their mouths as their eyes roll back in their head. Right. The only way that the public actually pays attention when you say the word redistricting is they see one of the maps. Yeah. And if it looks like a crocodile or it looks like a bug hitting the windshield, then they're like, oh, that's ridiculous. But, you know, how often do they see
pictures
of that?
They don't even see it,
They have to see the picture.
Well, I think you need to get Kim Kardashian talking about this.
See, there you go.
And the other
thing, maybe draw the map. No, let's not even
Kim Kardashian riding a vacuum cleaner.
I think there's room. You know, does it pass? Do the voters vote yay or nay, people?
Oh, I think it's probably going to pass.
Sadly.
mostly people vote down these proposals. Proposals don't pass that easily, so I'm hoping no.
I hope no, too. The wild card is there's three questions on the ballot this year. Right. One is on this. Proposal two is a technical change for the legislature. The third one is a $2 billion bond act for funding for high-tech technology for schools. My guess is Prop 3 is the tail that wags the dog, and if that passes with overwhelming, I think people vote pretty much yes down the line.
Fascinating. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. You want one more?
One really fast, and that is part of the problem with not knowing about state politics, because I think it's boring but a very important subject, is that the newspapers don't think it sells. And therefore, they don't. I mean, the Daily News has a sensational reporter, Ken Lovett. And the Times gets all the credit for having broken the Moreland Act story. But in fact, it was Ken Lovett at the Daily News who did it. He gets a little bit of space. But
the
not
papers
a lot.
Are all over this, though.
What'd you say?
The paper, Times Union, Daily News.
Oh, the Times Union is terrific.
They're all over it.
Times Union is terrific, but it's the Albany newspaper.
Okay. Roundtable@wamc.org. Thanks to NYPIRG Legislative Director Blair Horner, Rosemary Armeo, Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter. Aren't you glad you came back?
I am glad to be back, yes.
It's terrific. Nice to have you here. Alan Shartok, you as well. Good luck with the
terrific.
Big gig. I will talk to you before the gig.
Yeah, no, that's all.
I'll have a chance to get a few more shots in before the...